Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Whilst the UK still lumbers under high COVID infection rates and the economic recovery stalls with GDP growth now to trickle, the government wants to raise taxes. The central bank, with its so-called accommodative stance, will keep the economy fed with money, whilst the government wants to take it all away, or some of it anyway. Does any of this make sense? And aren't central banks kidding themselves anyway that QE is really helping? Between them, are they mismanaging their way through the crisis? And might they actually be making things worse? That's this week on the Debunking Economics podcast with Professor Steve Keen. I'm Phil Dobby. Welcome along. So this is a curious thing to do for a Prime Minister in the UK who won a landslide in the last election by taking Labour seats in the North, the Red Wall, it was called, with an agenda that promised to level up the economy so the Northerners would no longer be the poor cousins of those rich people in the South. But the curious thing is, this week, a 1.25% rise in national insurance contributions, not in income tax, which obviously is graded dependent on your income, in national insurance. Now, national insurance for most people is a flat tax. Everyone who earns more than £9,500 pays national insurance at the same rate of 12% until they earn £50,000. And everything over £50,000 gets taxed at 2%. So proportionately, the rich pay less. That's how crazy the system is in the UK right now. Now, that 12% is going up to 13.25%, so the less off are going to be hit even more, although the increase is going to be extend beyond that 50,000. So the 2% national insurance contribution goes up to 3.25%. The government is arguing that the well-off will pay more because they're paying this higher 1.25% for everything they earn over 50,000, but only because they've been paying disproportionately less all along. So, Steve, this is a grossly unfair tax, which is just getting worse, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, only the UK. I mean, you know, I'm so glad this is now an academic discussion for me in the sense that I no longer have to pay tax in the UK. But everything about the tax system in the UK was just either mind-bogglingly stupid or simply a case of let's kick the worker in the balls again.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you mentioned the poll tax.
We talked about that before we started recording.
Yeah, but
on Twitter, that's right. Is this Boris Johnson's poll tax moment? I think it might be. Mm. Well, I thought that, but then actually the response from everybody to this hasn't been that negative, surprisingly. People seem to be happy to be kicked in the balls, as you put
bizarre.
It.
So this is a national, this is the part that I'm still getting my head around. So the rate is, it's a surcharge like the one that is charged in Australia. For what they call the Medicare.
It also is supposed to cover your pension payments, but it doesn't matter. It's just it just goes into the general. It's not siphoned off or separated in any way. It just goes into the general morass of government revenue. But the idea covered your health and it covered your pensions. That was the idea behind it.
Which is nonsense, of course. But
and you don't get a full pension in this country unless you've paid for, I think it's 30 or 35 years of national insurance contributions. So you wouldn't you don't get a state pension unless you paid the money into the pot, basically.
God almighty. But like the crazy thing is, so below 10,000, let's say 10,000 quid, below 10,000 quid, you pay nothing. From 10 to 50, you pay 12%.
Yeah.
And then like, so somebody's earning 100,000 on the zero to, they pay nothing on the zero to 10, 12% on the 10 to 50, and then 2% on everything above 50,000.
Yeah. So I mean, with this increase, which apparently we're told is fair because the rich are going to be paying along with the poor. If you earn £50,000 a year, you'll pay an extra £500 a year with these increases. If you earn £1 million, you'll pay an extra £11,000. So you see, you're paying a lot more. So that makes it fair, doesn't it? Except for the fact that you're actually earning 20 times as much. But you're paying 20 times more as well. So, you know, if you're a Tory, you can actually say, well, that's fair, isn't it? Without looking at how unfair the inherent system was before you started to do that. But, you know, if you're earning £500 means a lot more to someone on 50,000 than 11,000 means to someone who's on a million, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the way the tax system has been designed in the UK, and it's almost like, you know, the games of rich school kids pulling the wings off flies type stuff. 12% flat tax, yeah, on people between 10,000 quid and 50,000 quid. And that's the vast majority of the population, of course.
Yeah.
I was in the section of the income bracket. You know, I earned about 90,000 quid as a professor when I was there. So what you're telling us, I was paying 12% tax on the 40,000 between 10 and 50, and then 2% on the tax above that.
Yeah. And then of course everyone else is paying 20% VAT as well. Let's not forget that. So the basic rate of income tax has fallen from 40% in the 1960s to 20% today. You know, it might be a good thing. That's the bottom level of tax. But the top rate of tax, that was 83% when Margaret Thatcher came into power. She took that down from 83% to 40%. So we had basically income tax, you know, which is a progressive system, has been eroded. National insurance has gone up, and VAT, the equivalent of GST in the UK, is now 20%. You know, it wasn't around before Margaret Thatcher came along. Now it's 20%. So it's a real move to consumption tax and paying for services. And, you know, if we all paid the same for health, or, you know, roughly the same, why bother taxing? Why not just say, well, we might as well have a pay-as-you-go system. We might as well privatise the NHS, because this is a big step towards that.
It is. I'm still...
You're astonished, aren't you?
It gags me. It's
but isn't it interesting that you were here and you were paying it?
It's like a Monty Python script, you know?
Yeah.
This is... But you know, Monty Python was a documentary, in my opinion, of the UK class structure.
Mm.
And this is another bloody case of it. You've got the middle-income earners, you know, low- to middle-income earners. What's the average salary in the UK? About £25,000?
No, a bit more than that, but not much more than
not
that.
Not much.
Yeah.
So everybody around the average is paying 12%, and those well above the average are paying 2%.
Yeah.
Marx might describe the government as the management committee for the ruling class. And the country, which is, whereas a lot of progressives see the government as a way of balancing the power of the majority against the power of the wealthy. But if any country justifies Marx's description, it's the UK.
The governments get away with it, and Boris is getting away with it, because first of all, national insurance is bloody complicated, as we've, you know, already discovered in the first 5 minutes of this podcast. Mm. People don't fully understand it. So they don't know what's going to hit them. And he has deflected the argument by basically saying, well, this is to cover the backlog in care from the NHS, because we've spent so much money dealing with the pandemic and the neglect from his government, by the way, of 10 years of underfunding for the NHS. So this is to play catch up on all of that, then to pay for social care, so to pay for people in nursing homes. So people look at all of that and say, well, that's got to be done, without looking at the vehicle behind it. So the question is, of course, which we'll come on to in a second, does it have to be tax at all? But if you're going to pick a tax, surely you'd pick income tax rather than picking national insurance. But national insurance has neatly been there to say, we are going to use this to pay for healthcare, therefore this is the vehicle that we should use, even though it all goes, it's not separated out, it all just goes into government coffers. So
and what it does,
it's an easy argument to win, isn't it? But the masses just go, well, that sounds like sense. And meanwhile, you've got a very complicated tax system that no one fully understands, except for those people rich enough to get accountants who can use it to try and avoid paying tax that you could possibly avoid.
Mm.
You know, it's the complication of it that helps the rich, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is, well, one thing I was surprised about when I got to the UK was you didn't automatically get a tax file number, because, as you know, in Australia, everybody has a tax file number. If you're working, you've got a tax file number. But in the UK, you might actually not have to pay tax because it's taken out at the source. And unless you have deductions, you don't have to file a statement. That's my memory of the system. I'm trying very hard to forget some parts of my experience.
Well, if you're on PAYE, your employer pays it, and you wouldn't need to put in a tax return.
It means that a lot of this stuff happens without you even noticing it. It's just what ends up in your pay packet.
Yeah.
So a lot of workers, people earning that, £10,000 to £50,000 a year, which is about 80% of the population, I would imagine, if not 90.
Yeah, don't know, but yeah, sounds about right.
That's what they get out of their pocket. They don't know they don't really know where it's going or why it's disappearing, but the government is taking money out of circulation via the working and middle class and leaving the ruling class alone. And to do what they want with their income, their cash flow, and it's just outrageous.
Yeah.
The only way I make sense of the UK is to go back to 1066, and say, okay, what happened in 1066 apart from a national health scheme? First of all, you managed to fight off the Vikings. That was good. Then Ethelred the Unready got done by William the Conqueror. At the Battle of Hastings, and William the Conqueror rewarded all his generals by slaughtering the Saxon ruling class of the Anglo-Saxons and Jutes, knocking them all off, installing his Normans on top and treating the bottom lot like peasants. And 900 years later, 1,000 years later, what are they doing? They're treating exactly the same bloody thing. You know, it's the only way to make sense of what the British do to the working class.
Right, but the argument would be this is all good because it's paying for healthcare, and the National Health is National Health Service is something we all love, and the government's providing it for us. They just need to make sure they're getting the money for it. So that's the government's stick on all of this. So don't worry about who's paying how much. It's just we've all got to chip in and do our thing to save the mighty NHS, and this new scheme will help everybody contribute. That's the sort of stuff that the Prime Minister's coming out with.
I hope you tussled your hair when you did that.
I did, absolutely, yep. And
the one on the left-hand side of your skull is better than the right-hand side.
And I've got the photographs of my 14 children in front of me as well as I spoke. But paying off healthcare. So here's the thing. First of all, well, two questions on this. First of all, it's an open trough, isn't it? You're going to constantly need filling because the average annual expenditure increase for the National Health Service since 1958 is 3.9% per year. And in fact, between 2000 and 2004, it averaged close to 9%. It's gone from 3% of GDP in 1958 to up to 7% just before the pandemic. The average household was contributing just before the pandemic around £6,000 a year to the NHS. For many now, that with this tax hike, they're going to be contributing an extra 10% if all that money does go to the NHS. But this is the whole thing, isn't it, about, well, we've got to pay for it. And we've got to pay for it now because the government is going to be in so much debt. So there's a whole modern monetary theory argument that says, well, do you have to tax to pay for it, or can you survive without doing that? Then there's the other thing that even if you don't go down the road and say, well, I'm not totally on board with modern monetary theory, there's the question about, well, you know, interest rates are so low right now. The economy is struggling. Is this really the best time to try and recover that money with a hike in taxes? Because you're just going to take money out of the economy. You're going to stop people spending, particularly the people on low incomes who spend everything they get.
Yeah, it's going to depress the economy in the interests of reviving the economy, which is the usual sort of nonsense that the Conservatives get into. Pardon me. I'm almost inarticulate because I'm still reacting
to this. You're still shocked by the,
how ridiculous that is. I mean, you draw that as a scale, it's just like 0 out to 10 and then 12% from 10 to 50 and then down to 2%.
Yeah. User pays. It's basically saying user pays. And if you're very rich, you're not paying that much. You're not paying, if you're very rich, you're probably on private health care.
The national health becomes a, the peasants are paying for your health care.
Do you know it's worse than that, actually? Let me take it another stage. If you're not aghast by all of that. So the idea is that a lot of this will pay for social care. So people who are living in care homes, which are used to be provided by local authorities by and large, now, because local authorities have reduced the number of social care places that are available, a lot of for-profit companies are in this sector now. So 85% of social care places are provided by for-profit companies. So in effect, what you're doing is you're actually saying, well, OK, you're going to pay to improve social care. And a lot of that money is going to find itself in the pockets of for-profit companies. So it's the poor paying for the
profits of the rich.
Yeah. So it's even more astonishing, isn't it? Gets more astonishing by the second.
Yeah. I mean, let's take the sensible approach to begin with, and that is the government creates money. What taxation does is take money out of circulation. It doesn't pay for anything in that sense. That's the advantage of seeing through a modern monetary theory lens. The question is, who do you take the money out of? Now, if you take it out of the accounts of a particular social class, that social class is going to have less of that money left over. The other social classes will have more. So what is this doing? It's taking the money out of the hands of the working and middle class and giving it to the and leaving it in the hands of the ruling class. And that's why I say the only way to understand the UK is to imagine that William the Conqueror is still in charge and he still regards the Angles and Saxons as dukes, as a bunch of peasants who deserve to be done in. And that's what this is doing.
Yeah.
No other way to it is just ludicrous that the UK lets this happen to itself. They still vote for conservatives,
and they still will.
They still get,
and they still because I was
the same way.
When I tweeted that this is Boris Johnson's poll tax moment, because it was pretty much the same thing. You know, Margaret Thatcher went too far. She didn't quite understand that actually placing a flat amount, that wasn't a flat tax, that was actually a flat fee that you should pay everybody, whether you earned a £10 million or £15,000, if you lived in a particular local authority area, then you should pay the same, physically the same amount of money to cover your national, to cover your local authority services, for the bins and all that sort of stuff. And then even worse, if you were in a rich neighborhood, then in fact the poll tax was generally less. It was the poor neighborhoods that needed more services that had to charge more. And of course, there were places where there were poor people. Margaret Thatcher didn't really realize that wasn't going to go out too well. There were the poll tax riots, and she, in the end, was ousted. It's the thing that finished her off. I was wondering whether it's not quite as extreme as poll tax, but it is a flat rate tax that is being applied to everybody, which means that the poor are worse off as a result of it. But you know what? I was expecting there would be riots and revolts, at least, the odd newspaper article, but the whole focus in the press and that the whole debate that's taking place on social media is basically, isn't this good? The NHS is getting more money at long last.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So people are buying it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the depressing thing, that this mainstream thinking, how we're going to pay for it, is so pervasive. And it's everybody thinks in terms of a household and how do we raise the money for it. I have to put up my fees. Well, the government's got to do the same thing. And therefore, they get a free pass for doing this. But, for a start, they should have it should be a flat percentage. If you're going to do it at all, it should be a flat percentage of income for everybody, which is what the Australian situation is, the 2% rate on income tax, no matter what your income is.
Well, the UK actually it's 2%, isn't it, if you don't pay national health insurance. So in the UK, if you take out private national health insurance, you don't pay that surcharge. So the Australian way is basically to say, hey, take out private health insurance. That way we don't need to worry about it. If you don't do that, then we're going to charge you 2%. So for a lot of people, the richer you are, the more incentive there is for you to take out private health insurance.
So, because that's a flat fee versus paying 2% of your income.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know whether that's a good system or not. I used to hate it when I lived in Australia. I used to think, why shouldn't I choose, if I want to take private health cover, or if I want to pay for my own health cover, why do I need to pay an insurance company? I just looked at it and thought this is just a subsidy for the health insurance industry rather than the health industry. But looking back at it in distance now and seeing what in the UK, it doesn't seem that bad, perhaps.
Compared to the UK, it's got to be better because you couldn't do worse than that unless you taxed tax 20% for people on zero income and dropped it down to, you know, zero tax on those above 100,000. It's just so ludicrously unfair. And the thing is, what this means is when you look at how, you know, money is actually created, the government, by running a deficit, creates money. It then, by taxing, it takes that money out of circulation. But when it's taxing, it's taking out of a particular person's bank accounts. So if you have a system which the poor obviously can't evade because they can't afford, they've got to do their own tax. They can't hire an accountant to do it for them to begin with. They can't do anything to fight it. You're taking out 12% of their income. Now you're bumping out 13.5% you're taking out. They end up with nothing in their bank accounts, whereas with the rich who are earning, obviously, because they are rich, earning far more, and you're taking less out of their banks. So you're actually encouraging the inequality of the accumulation of income. And that's out of the money being created by the government sector, let alone the property owning differences between social classes there. So it's just, again, it's Monty Python all over.
Let's look at another dimension of this then, because currently you can get care from your, so we're talking about old age pensioners now who maybe need to go into a home or get some sort of support that they can't look after themselves at home, or disabled people, anybody who needs assistance. You can't, and it really was the role of the local council to provide that care. It was part of their remit. The rule was basically, if you've got savings of more than £23,250, which is, you know, not a lot, then you can't get help with a care home cost if you own your own property. So if you own your own property, but you've got savings of less than that, it doesn't matter. But if you've got that amount of money and you own your own property, then you can't get help. You basically got to sell your house. Now that threshold has been increased to £100,000. Still not a great deal, but the idea is that, you know, older people say, well, we want to hang on to our homes for as long as possible. So we'll take that hundred. You know, you can pay us before we have to sell our house. You can pay our healthcare. So, but there's a question here, isn't there? And how unfair is it? I mean, nobody wants to get rid of their house, but there is the question about young people on low incomes, perhaps with university debt, having to pay to help older people keep their homes that they bought at a far lower rate without debt from university, buying at a time when homes were three or four times the salary rather than eight or ten times. So you've got young people helping old people hang on to their houses to pay for their healthcare when those young people haven't got a cat in the hell's chance of being able to afford a house themselves, and even more so now because their taxes have just gone up.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? So, you know, because everyone wants to keep their house. I mean, it seems unfair that you have to get rid of it. But how do you solve that particular quandary?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I mean, this there should be, I mean,
you're speechless by all of this, aren't you?
Completely inarticulate because it is so, I mean, I'm used to handling stupidity on a regular basis. I'm reading neoclassical economics all the time. That's certainly a lesson in seeing how people, intelligent people, make stupid decisions with stupid logic. But this is it's outrageously.
But how
stupid.
Do you? Okay, so a broader question: how do you create a situation where old people who need to go into homes later in life don't have to sell their house to be able to afford to do it? Or should they just have to sell it? I mean, they don't need the house anymore if they're getting provided with care. Maybe they should just sell them.
Well, I mean, you've turned this is getting into another issue, because you've turned housing into an asset rather than a consumption item. If you were looking at houses were just places we lived in, you know, for shelter alone, then that wouldn't be an issue. It's the fact that it turns up in inheritance and passing on wealth from one generation to another that it becomes the issue is we're discussing it. I saw Stephanie Kelton has a great talk out on TED right now. She's got to do an official TED talk on MMT. But this again comes down to what happens when you mistake that the government creates the money it needs for things like paying for a national health scheme, and the taxation does nothing. It had nothing to do with it. But because we have this wrong notion that taxes pay for services, then people can be persuaded to believe they have to pay a tax, otherwise there won't be a national health scheme. Now, as Stephanie would say, if you don't pay your taxes, there'd be runaway inflation, not a national health scheme. It wouldn't be the national health scheme you do without the tax. It'd be price stability you do without the tax. So you don't need, the government could simply be funding the national health. And then the question is, that takes money to fund the national health. They create the money by running a deficit. But you create so much money because of the scale of government spending, then you have to take it out of circulation. And whose bank accounts do you take it out of? And the preference should be at least, you know, constant across all income streams, preferably progressive, taking money out of the hands of people to whom that money is less significant than it is when you're poor. But the Brits do the exact opposite. They're taking it out of the hands of people who need it desperately and putting it in the hands of those who are already comfortable.
And it's going to the National Health Service for most healthcare. It's not going into there's a lot of private enterprise. As I said, 85% of social care places are run by for-profit companies. So what's your thought on that, on the mix? Because I can argue convincingly both ways here, Steve. Because if you look at the National Health Service, you've got a national care provider. The only game in town for a lot of providers of the services, but also, you know, stuff that's the consumables by the National Health Service. You can charge them what they like because they're going to pay. So there's that whole thing, isn't there, about prices of consumables get inflated. It's like if the government says, hey, we're going to build lots of motorways, guess what? The price of tarmac goes up. So it's the same with the National Health Service. But on the other side, you've got healthcare providers for the elderly making profits out of what was once provided for by the public sector, and that doesn't seem right, does it? That shareholders are benefiting from taxpayers paying to keep people in care homes.
Well, a large part of profit for the low life in capitalism actually comes out of exploiting loopholes in government regulations and taking in things like care homes and under providing to the residents of those places, and therefore getting a high level of profit and paying lousy wages to the workers, et cetera, et cetera. Often when you get, and there's some classic instances of that, again, I've seen in Australia recently, Lamborghini owning executives who run care homes where the level of food being passed out to the residents is causing malnutrition. That sort of appalling treatment. So in this sort of area, I'm in favour of the government being the provider all the way through and setting minimum standards, both standards in the sense of the salaries of people who work there, so you don't get the gig economy effect where people work at two or three of these places. And that's one of the reasons we had such an outbreak of COVID through care homes to begin with. And then... minimum standards for the residents as well, because otherwise they'll get screwed by the unprincipled elements of the ruling class, and there's a fair few of those in the
well,
UK.
Let's get sued then, shall we? Let's talk about one small example. Can't get sued because it's in their annual report. If you take an issue with this,
okay.
So Barchester Healthcare, it's a company that the Macquarie Bank actually were going to buy. It's a UK company. They're so successful, the Macquarie Bank, who big in any big infrastructure play, monopolies their favourites. They were going to invest in Barchester Healthcare, basically buy them out, but they pulled out because of uncertainty over Brexit and the pound. So mid-range player, they only make £658 million a year, or they did in 2019. They had a before-tax profit of £21 million, small margin, I guess, but still they managed to pay dividends of £9 million. There's £9 million going to their investors. Then the highest paid director was on £2 million, so I'm sure he's got a Lamborghini. And, of course, because they're a company, they're paying corporate tax and other taxes, so they're paying £6 million back into taxes. So there's a whole heap of money which is being spent not on healthcare. It doesn't make any sense, does it? When you could just have, give a slice of that, a lot less money than Barchester Healthcare is making, give that to local authority and say, hey, here you are, you do it.
Yeah, and the privatisation of healthcare and of aged care as well has been a travesty wherever you see it happening, because often the profits that come out of under-provisioning. And you then have entire bureaucracy being necessary to go and check and see whether that's happening or not. So the costs of monitoring and then the salaries that are paid to the top executives in these groups and the profits that are taken are far more inefficient than if it was done by a bungling government institution in the first place. So it's the mythical argument of the, you know, efficient private sector and the bungling public, leaving out the extent to which you've got the robber baron personalities getting in charge of those, rather than, the whole idea that competition will solve this is a fallacy, where you've got stuff which is, you know, essential for life. If you are going to have aged care, then the alternative of not getting aged care is being homeless on the street. It's not the sort of place where you can go and decide to go to one supermarket or another and buy, you know, your favourite brand of bubble gum at a lower price. So the whole idea that the price mechanism will cope with this is just wrong when you've got critical things like healthcare and like aged care.
To one of our listeners, I love this. I don't know if it was a comment on the website or whether it was a tweet, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, capitalism is a marvellous thing once you've covered all the necessities of life. You know, the market forces should be there once you've covered the essentials. So, you know, health obviously is an essential. Here's a to finish off. Tell me, you'll be very pleased to know I've got a policy here. This is what I think Boris should have done to try and fix the whole problem, without going down the whole road of telling everybody that, you know, hey, look at modern monetary theory, which obviously is the way forward. Just let the government spend the money, and don't worry about the debt, because it's not really debt. If you still wanted to balance the books, if you still had that idea, then the issues are, how do you pay all this money without people selling their homes? That seems to be the big fear. And in fact, Theresa May basically lost her position, because she was saying, yeah, you know, people should have to sell their homes. That was in effect what she was advocating. So that people don't want to do that for some reason, even though they're not going to need it. And the reason is because their kids are looking at it and rubbing their hands with glee and saying, isn't this marvellous inherited wealth, which is massive in the UK. I know so many people, 'cause my wife, you know, rides horses, so she's with the horses. She's at the lower end of the horsey set, because I'm having to pay for it and she's having to pay for it. But she mixes with very, very wealthy people who don't have high-paying jobs. It's all inherited wealth. We've got massive estates. It's just astonishing how much inherited wealth there is in the UK, far more than you see in Australia. So that's the two-speed economy based on inheritance. So I'd stop this inherited wealth by saying you don't have to sell your home to pay for your healthcare, but there's going to be a very hefty inheritance tax. So you can hang on to your house, but you're going to have to sell it anyway, and you know, when you die, and the estate's not going to get passed on to your kids. I think that would keep the value of houses down, because people wouldn't be over-investing in it as a means of passing on their wealth. So it would make, you know, arguably, houses more affordable. It would also more than cover the cost of healthcare, because it would be going to look after the poor people rather than buying vast quantities of land in the UK. And obviously it would limit the costs and profitability of those private care providers if they existed, because there'd be less money available from the sale of homes. I'm sure a lot of these companies are doing well because they're preying on people at a time when, you know, when an old person who's not got all their mental faculties sells their house to afford to pay for a care home. Obviously the care home's going to overcharge. So you get over that problem because they're not selling their house. So it would subdue the cost even if you had private care providers. It would all be solved basically by saying, yeah, we're going to have a hefty inheritance tax and we're going to use that to pay for the health service.
And that would involve going back and winning and defeating the Normans at 1066. I mean, you know, it's just this attitude of, you know, screw the workers. It certainly dominates the Conservative Party in the UK, but it's throughout the tax scheme, and yet this is
the Labour Party's got no answer. I mean, there's the Labour. You know, this is a
did Labour get rid of the poll tax?
Oh, well, the Conservatives got rid of the poll tax because they knew it was going to be unpopular. It wasn't getting.
But you got the bedroom tax, haven't you? That's still there.
Yeah, well, that's a social care. Yeah, that's a if you've got a house, if you are living in a council house and the council house is too big for you, then you have to pay a tax on the.
But there is a local tax based on how many bedrooms your house has.
Oh, you pay your rates. Which is based on
how many bedrooms you have.
Well, okay? It's part and parcel of it. It also how big your garden is and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
But it's per bedroom, regardless of whether the bedroom's got Louis XV ceilings or not. it's a flat rate thing which hits the working class and barely touches the wealthy. And this again is just seems to be the nature of the UK establishment. Almost regardless whether you got Labour or Conservatives in power, that sort of thing remains. And the end result is you've got a working class and a middle class that can't afford to spend. And wow, you get a stagnant economy out of that. How amazing.
Amazing, isn't it? That, here we are with our bounce back economy, as we come out of the worst recession ever. Certainly since the war, and this was the last quarter was going to be one of those magnificent quarters of growth, and actually it grew 0.1%. So the recovery has stalled, really not a great time to be putting taxes up. You wouldn't have thought.
And that's the thing. You want government money is the only thing that kept the global economy going through COVID, and now to be taking it out on the other side is the downturn in private spending was countered by government spending. Now you're going to cause a downturn by reducing that government spending after the whole crisis, if there is such a thing as after. I still wonder whether we're ever going to be talking about post-COVID and actually generally mean it's not there anymore, or we've reduced it to a minor seasonal illness. But the damage we're doing to the nature of society in the process of all this is just breathtaking.
Mm. Well,
look, one and a half percent. Oh God Almighty!
One and a quarter. No, it's not that bad. Don't overplay it, Steve. It's only 1.25%.
No, only 1.25%. Yeah.
Well, look, I'm glad you're aghast by this because I was astonished, and I was even more astonished by the fact that the media hadn't picked up on it. So I had to vent my spleen on this one. So thank you for allowing me to and sharing my horror at it all.
It is horror.
Look, next week we'll go. We've talked about QE a lot, but I want to look at the way central banks are responding now to us supposedly coming out of the pandemic. Even though, as you say, it's going to be with us for quite the virus is going to be with us for quite some time. And I want to ask the question: is QE actually becoming MMT just by another name? Do we actually ever expect that this money is going to be paid back? We'll look at that next week. Thanks, Steve.
Okay. All right. Bye.
This issue of inheritance tax is going to be something that I think is going to be big in the news this week. Last month, there was one Tory backbench MP in the UK who was saying that inheritance tax should be reduced to 10%. So we have more wealth being passed on from generation to generation. What a bad idea that was. And yet there's newspaper reports this weekend saying that actually inheritance tax is next in the firing line. More people might have to sell their home to pay for their healthcare. Well, they wouldn't have to sell their home if, as I suggested, we just had a bigger inheritance tax. Makes no difference, really, does it? If you're not going to live in the house because you're living in a care home. But why should it get passed on to your kids? We'd welcome your thoughts on that. We're back again next week with another one. Look, you've had the benefit of a full episode, even if you're a non-paying subscriber this week. Normally, you just get a 10-minute taste of the full podcast. So hopefully you'll become a subscriber and you'll join us at debunkingeconomics.com or at patreon.com/prof.stevekeen. Back next week, I'm Phil Dobby with Steve Keen. See you then.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you've enjoyed listening to Debunking Economics, even if you haven't, you might also enjoy The Y Curve. Each week, Roger Hearing and I talk to a guest about a topic that is very much in the news that week. It's lively, it's fun, it's informative. What more could you want? So search The Y Curve in your favourite podcast app or go to ycurve.com to listen.